3, 2, 1.
Here we go! Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of the No Normals Show, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future. All related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm your co-host, Stephanie Weirill, EVP of Integrated Marketing here at Revive, and I'm joined, as always, by the amazing, the incredible, the brilliant Chris Wickline, SVP of Strategy. Hello, Chris.
Oh my gosh. Hello, Stephanie. Oh my, I don't know what I did to deserve that, but thank you. What a greeting.
You're just yourself. That's what you did. And we have another really awesome special guest this episode. We are going to continue our branding and healthcare series, this time with a focus on branding in a B2B world. And we brought in Revive's resident B2B expert and strategist, Brennan Mason, VP of Strategy. Hello, Brennan.
Hello, Stephanie.
Hi. So for those who don't know Brennan, super excited for you all to get to know him. He has such an incredible background. He's worked with brands like 3M, Brookdale Senior Living Facilities, Premise Health, and he's also led Bridge Connector, which is a platform as a service company, as chief marketing officer before joining Revive. And a very fun fact, he's an Army veteran. So thank you for your service, Brennan.
Yes, for sure. Can I say one more fun fact about
please.
Brennan? There's many fun facts about Brennan.
Oh, no.
And I'm lucky to get to work with him, but he's also got the coolest dog, Benji, who happens to be with us in the office today. So
okay, that I'll take that one. Yes.
Okay. Well, Brennan, I can see you're in a very small phone booth room. So I don't know if Benji's there with you, but that would be amazing.
He leaves me alone when I go into solitary confinement, which is what these tiny rooms feel like.
Okay. All right. Well, just to give a little background, we have been kind of in a season of the No Normal. It's been really fun. We've been talking about brand building and healthcare. And certainly brand building and healthcare is top of mind for all kinds of organizations, B2B, B2C, G2C, B2B2C, all of the alphabet soups. And healthcare organizations of all kinds have lots of audiences, right? Providers have to connect with consumers, patients, clinicians, referring physicians, policymakers, the press, the list goes on and on and on. Health tech organizations have to sell into providers, plans, others. So the point is, all organizations really have to think about B2B in some realm. We're probably going to focus the bulk of our conversation today on kind of the more traditional, tried and true B2B, like health tech organizations, but really this applies for all kinds of audiences. And so we'll just get right into it. Again, the topic here is branding in this B2B world. And sometimes there's a misconception that there's not as much brand building to do when you are in a B2B business-to-business environment. So why don't we just start there? Brennan, do you want to kick us off? What does brand building look like in this business-to-business world?
Sure. So in B2B, especially when you look at mid-market and growth stage companies, there can be a little bit of a delayed action or delayed thoughts when it comes to building the brand, because there's a lot of focus on lead gen, because companies at that stage are focused mostly on growth, and they see lead gen as the easiest, most direct path to growth, because you can do the math and say, okay, if we just get 500 leads, we'll close 100 deals, we'll get this much in revenue. So, you know, it makes sense how you can get to that mindset. And when you are operating solely in that mindset, marketing becomes really kind of a function to serve the sales team. And these are a lot of times very sales-driven organizations. And then your marketing's role becomes diminished to really just a function to feed leads to the sales team. And I don't want to diminish the importance of that. And, you know, gosh, sales is tough. I spent very little time, but some time carrying a bag with a patch. That is a thankless job, especially in this area. Man, that's tough. But it is, I think, if you look at marketing as a whole, kind of a small minded-ish view. And it tries to put the buying process in this direct response way when that's just not really how people buy. People don't buy enterprise software, for example, by one ad and then starting the sales process. It's extremely rare that that's how that actually works, but you see many lead gen programs be structured as if that's the way everybody is buying. So it's a little bit tricky. And, you know, B2B folks, when you're at those organizations, you work very closely to sales. I mean, sometimes you're probably literally sitting next to them. And that's different than at a consumer organization. If you look at a company like Mattel, Mattel is extremely far removed from the actual sale. Even though the organization is surely driven by sales, the people in the marketing team focus more on the brand side than, you know, just directly trying to drive sales. That's a function more of other areas. You could look like merchandising or things like that. And so it's really easy to have that obsession with just direct response. And again, I don't want to diminish the function or the importance of direct response, but normally when you think of something or you have a need that comes up, some type of solution comes into your mind. And that's true whether you are hungry and want ice cream or your organization needs some type of enterprise software. There's usually something that immediately comes to mind as a potential solution. And that's where you start to get the value of brand building. Because if you are that thing that immediately comes to mind as a solution, or you're at least in the consideration set, all the other programs, especially things like lead gen, become much, much, much more effective. And if you look in the B2B world and you look at organizations that have made investments into brand building, you're looking at some of the top performers over time. These are organizations like Microsoft, like Salesforce. They spend a lot of time and energy and money making sure that when a need comes up, they are, if not the top, at least in the consideration set.
So let me ask you, God, that was a great kind of summary of the challenge of what it is to be a B2B marketer, right? So, you know, the way we talk about it a lot is in the way we hear about it in marketing is we have that framework of, you know, the long and the short of it, the idea of brand building and activation. And, you know, you talked about that easy, how it's a very natural focus, I should say, to focus on the activation versus the brand building. Tell me, you know, clearly we need it, but based on your experience, what is, you know, how can you build a case to think a little bit about being that brand that that folks think of when they are in the market for something? I mean, if it's so important, what are some of the biggest barriers besides the fact that it's easier to focus on short-term sales?
I think first, sometimes you're stuck in an organization where the CEO just doesn't believe in that, or the executive team doesn't believe in that. You know, there's not much you can do about that. You know, you can try to make your case, but sometimes the organizational culture is going to work against you. But there's a lot of things that B2B companies tell themselves that they have to be that are not necessarily true. And one of those things is complicated. Well, what we do is complicated, so everything we talk about must be super complex. And that is, again, I understand how you get there, but you really need to be able to simply explain what problem you're solving for the audience, whether you are a Snickers bar or an extremely complex piece of software. It has to be able to be easily understood. And the way you say that also needs to make sense. You know, if someone goes to your website and it's just like, someone asked ChatGPT to generate buzzwords, I think that's really going to work against you because everyone's like, what does this company actually do? They make that really, really simple to understand.
Yeah, that is such a great example, Brennan, because I'm sure we've all had that experience. It sounds so obvious, but it's maybe not. I'm going to make a connection back to brand building and sales for a minute because we also all experience the 95, you know, vendor emails a day. and I'm sure our listeners do too. And a lot of times those emails, which are sales driven emails, they, you know, you can't read it very quickly within 5 seconds and understand what the person and the company offers. That's one of the powers of developing a really strong brand, right? Is if your organization has a really crystal clear brand, really crystal clear story, way to communicate it, elevator pitch, then that can be picked up by the sales team and leveraged as well and personalized and all of that. But that's just one example that comes to mind for me based on what you were just talking about, Brennan.
Yeah. So justifying the value of brand, not just in really being able to very clearly and easily simplify your story, right?
Yes. So you also set up earlier, Brennan, this idea of the way people make decisions in a B2B environment. You mentioned, you know, whether someone's choosing what ice cream to eat or choosing software. Yes, there's very many differences. And let's get into some of those differences, but also similarities. You know, one pretty obvious thing is that the B2B journey is a really long journey, right? You're not just craving ice cream and going and grabbing it. You have to run it through all kinds of decision makers and layers of approval, and it might be months or even years to make that decision depending on how large the product or service purchase is. So why don't we just talk a little bit about the B2B journey? Either Brennan or Chris, do you want to share any kinds of insights or examples that you've seen in your experience around that journey, and specifically how can marketers better understand it and use it in a brand building way?
Well, I'll think about emotions first, because that's something that B2B marketers, you know, to our fault, almost always discount when we're thinking about our marketing strategies. And that's something that consumer marketers almost always prioritize, if not the top priority in their campaigns. And that doesn't really make sense, because there's a thought that, well, we're selling into a business, so it's all going to be very rational and pragmatic. And it, for better or for worse, it is just not like that at all. You know, people don't turn into calculators when they come into work. Even though there might be a more formal purchasing process and it has to go through layers, people still are making decisions on emotion. It's still people behind those decisions. People want to work with companies that they think are cool or that are going to be good for them. And it goes past just, you know, what boxes you can check on a spreadsheet. And so we can't take that fully out of the equation. And I see that a lot, where it's almost completely taken out, where we try to have no emotion. We just talk facts and figures. And I think if you are not trying to dip into emotion, you are really leaving a lot on the table.
Yeah, I'm going to have an Oprah moment here and say, that is an aha, Brennan. People do not turn into calculators when they come into work. Let's just sit on that one for a second and really pull it apart, because humans are humans, and whether they're at work or whether they're at home, they kind of have similar thought processes. And yes, there's a level of rational and logical, you know, kind of thinking that goes into B2B decisions more so than B2C for sure. But I guess I'll give my own little personal experience and anecdote, you know, kind of an example that I think is a B2B organization that's done a great job playing up emotions is Salesforce. Everyone knows Salesforce, even if they're not going to be a buyer of it potentially, if they're, you know, in an adjacent industry. But the reason why is because they've injected a lot of emotion and kind of fun into the idea of innovation and technology, whether it's with their Dreamforce conference, which always makes headlines and hits my social feeds, or whether it's with the content that they create and even the bright colors they use. And they've just done this really good job of sort of suggesting that innovation is fun. And that's not, you know, the approach for everybody, but it pulls at your heartstrings, and it makes me feel like that's a club I want to join, right? I want to be at Dreamforce because I want to be seen as innovative. I want to be seen as on the cutting edge of tech. And so it's the t-shirt test, which we use a lot, you know, for consumer brands, right? Which is like, do people want to wear a t-shirt with your logo on it? I would argue people want to wear a t-shirt with the Salesforce logo on it. And that's because of that emotion that they've created. So that's just my own personal kind of example. Are there any others that you all have seen that you think, you know, either do a good job or have really leveraged emotion and logic?
Yeah, I think Accenture, if you look at a space that is almost by definition boring, which is consulting, I mean, it's used as a joke for how boring it is. But Accenture has done a really good job of making it feel like if you're working with Accenture, it's because you're trying to be an innovator, or you're trying to be a future builder, or you're trying to be something very interesting, have some type of transformation or something like that, which has made them stand out in what they are trying to be compared to like a McKinsey or, you know, an Ernst & Young that still try to follow that, you know, traditional management consulting type of brand. It's very pragmatic. So people in suits will show up and they'll talk to you. But, you know, Accenture's really taking a different direction there.
I mean, you know, one thing I think about as you talk about emotion, and yeah, okay, people aren't checking their emotions at the door. I also wonder how much of it plays into the fact that a brand reputation can also signify some kind of safety. So, you know, in high stakes purchases, right? I mean, it's also about, you know, the fact that it, I think there's a sense of that safety going with something that's a more known thing than an unknown thing. And I don't think that we can deny that, particularly in a space where, you know, we don't have singular decision makers. There's so many different influencers, at least in the healthcare tech space, right? That come into play. So I'm curious again, how things like not just being, you know, the emotion of it, how it plays into that factor that it's a proxy for trust.
Yeah. And Chris, I think about that and I think, okay, what's the emotion? Even if we're trying to make the case, you know, we're the best pragmatic choice. We are just the best choice. What does that mean for the person? And it's, at the very least, I'm not going to get fired. I get to keep my job for a couple more years, or maybe I'll get promoted. And boy, thinking about losing your job is one of the strongest emotions. I mean, if I've been laid off, if anybody out there has been laid off, you know, it really is awful. And so just like making somebody feel secure, that's a very strong emotion. Security is something that you can absolutely dip into.
Yeah, Brendan, didn't you just a couple of days ago, you used a really good analogy or example of IBM and how they actually played directly into that in their marketing, right?
Yeah, that was it for a long time. Like you would just say you don't get fired for hiring IBM. And so it became kind of the default safe option, which a lot of people, you know, you say being the default safe option, especially marketers, will say, well, that's bad. That's boring. It can be boring. It can be. But security is a very legitimate emotion to try and play off of. And you can still do interesting things with that idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, you know, what do you want the person to feel and experience? And by the person, I mean not so much the one that's maybe doing the effort to get the various options of products or services, but their decision makers. And you want them to feel and think, I've heard of them before. I've heard of this option before, and I have heard some good stories. And you know, I have some prior knowledge. That's what brand does. Chris, you often talk about brand as long-term demand generation, right? Or is that, what's the phrase you've used before? It's kind of like, am I getting that right? That it's setting up the long-term sales, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it's kind of it's the work that we're doing to kind of build the preference that we're looking for, right? Or at least the awareness, the preference, the some kind of, okay, you're in the short list of consideration when I have a need, right?
Yeah. So maybe we can give some maybe specific examples and we can maybe get into a little bit of the tactical details. Cause I imagine, you know, we've kind of covered some philosophical stuff, but now like, okay, practically, what does this look like? How do we actually build a brand? So we've got some examples and case studies in our Revive land that we've worked on and really helped. Brendan, maybe I'll turn it to you first because you've been a strong partner to 3M over the course of the last several years. And you know, you've done some really interesting things with them from a brand building standpoint.
Yeah, working with 3M has been a lot of fun, and specifically with 3M Healthcare, because you're trying to balance that association with the parent brand with how much of our own thing do we want to be. And it's really interesting because 3M, big 3M, their history is as you know, a product sciences company. So everything is very much rooted in science and fact and logic. I remember going to their campus. They have a whole museum dedicated to their inventions and their innovations. And that can come off as dry, but it can also be a launching point to center a brand around being an innovator, which is the direction we wanted to go in for 3M Healthcare. Because we felt like 3M Healthcare had become into that, gone into that safe option, but not safe in a good way, safe in a falling behind the times way. And other competitors were working to deposition them so that they were losing their advantage and their spot as innovators. So dipping into that kind of thread of innovation was really, really interesting. So we were almost like borrowing from the bigger brand to reinvigorate the 3M Healthcare side and say, no, we're the original innovators. We've been innovating for 100 years. We have the authority to occupy that space in the mind of the buyer.
Awesome. Yeah, I love that. Kind of your last point there. The point of brand is to occupy a specific space in the mind of the buyer. Yeah, that's great. I'll give another example. So we have partnered in the past with Omnicell, which is a AI and robotics organization. And their job is to kind of handle the back of the house tasks in a pharmacy. So things like dispensing of medication and pill counting and things like that. And so they use really incredible, interesting robotics to make that happen. So, you know, you made the point earlier, Brendan, about, you know, kind of being in those headquarters. Like when you go see the products that Omnicell has, they're just astounding. But how do you get someone there? How do you get someone to the point of a demo? And so they had a problem, like you had mentioned earlier, is very frequent in this space, which is lots of jargon, you know, lots of like difficult. How do you communicate that in a really simple way? Because you don't want to get too technical up front. You just want to position the story. And so the way that they did that was kind of talking about how their job is to elevate the role of the pharmacist, to get the pharmacist to the front of the house, to actually be caring for patients, which is what they got into the industry to do, and not have to do all the admin tasks. So that's Omnicell's job, is to handle all the admin tasks so that your pharmacist can really be caring for patients. And of course, yes, there's cost savings that come into it. There's less errors because you're kind of taking the human error out of it. So that's from a decision maker and a leader standpoint, really the sales pitch. So a lot of really fun work went into telling that story in a really simple way and making sure that A, the pharmacist sees the emotional benefit because they're like, oh, finally, I can do what I got into this industry to do. And then the leaders see the emotional benefit, which is, oof, we have a cost problem. You know, if I can save my health system or my retail health organization X amount of dollars, and if I can reduce errors, you know, to your point, Brendan, like I'm going to be seen as a hero. So there's absolutely rational side of it, but then the emotional side of it too. And then the power of really bringing those robots into conferences and events and showing them off and letting people see them and explore them, experiment with them. That's, you know, part of the story too. So I think that's an example where number one job, tell your story in a crisp, clear way. Number two job, make sure that your multiple target audiences can really see the benefit for them. And number three job is let people explore and experiment with the product. And I think if you do those three things well, then that's really the job of the brand. Any other examples you want to show? Oh, go ahead, Brendan.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, if there's still skepticism about whether or not your buyers buy on emotion, first off, I love you because you're skeptical. And like, you know, who am I to tell you how to think? Whatever. But go try this out. Especially if you're doing something like selling to a health system. I want you to see if you can pay attention to what that CFO or CEO of that health system drove to work that day, and then tell me how pragmatic and practical of a person they are. Because I don't think they drove that 7 Series to work because it's a well-engineered, practical German automobile. They bought it because they want to project something, whether it's I'm so cool or I'm at this status. They want to project something, and that doesn't stop at the door when they walk into work.
God, that's so funny. That's a great example. I mean, it's true, you know, and I think again, just the echo chamber of the product, the features, the benefit, the attributes. Our story can sometimes, you know, sometimes get very lost and hard to break out of. So it's a good reminder.
Yeah. And it's not that they're not important, right? It's just not the first thing that you introduce. So hi, hello, nice to meet you. It's down the pathway of, okay, now we want to see a demo. Now we're really interested. Now we're really comparing options. That's when the logical mind turns on. And so in mapping out that journey, it's part of using research and data to figure out, you know, when does the logical mind turn on and at what point in the sales cycle is that? And that's when you give them all of the data and all of the, you know, all of those things. So there's still a role for it. Okay. Well, I think if we can summarize any key takeaways or any first steps, or, you know, maybe not first steps, but kind of second or third steps, kind of what are the few things, Brendan and Chris, that you think that B2B marketers should really be thinking about? Let's say that maybe there's a B2B marketer out there who feels like they have a decent story, but they really need to do a better job with brand building. They know that it's time to build the brand. How would you recommend that they either get started, or what are some watch outs that you would give to make sure that there's no missteps along the way?
Yeah, the first thing I would say is figure out from a brand perspective what you want to be. If we think about CRM, think of Salesforce, Microsoft, and Oracle. All three of those project three very different images. And they're all very valid. You know, I think some are working better than others, but you have to figure out first what you want to be. What are you trying to project to your buyers? What do you want your brand to mean to them? That's step number one, because then that's what you have to build around. I would say step two is you have to get organizational buy-in. Like in the B2B world, you have to be aligned with your sales team. You have to be aligned with your sales executives. When I was, you know, at Bridge Connector, our head of sales was my business partner. Like we talked all the time. We were aligned on everything. If we weren't aligned, we got aligned, because you can't work against each other. You can't put up this wall, and you have to be totally locked in. And when you're locked in and you're supporting each other, everything down to the most tactical level gets easier. Even things like events, like your marketing team is throwing an event, your sales team is supporting. Everything gets so much easier when marketing and sales are working in lockstep as like a broader team. And there's some very specific ways to do that. One thing that comes to mind is incentives. If there's any, you know, upside incentives, whether it's compensation or whatever, I would make sure that it's the same as much as you can for marketing and sales. That way marketing and sales aren't chasing two different goals, because that can start to cause some conflict and some abrasion. I'll say third is validate that in the market. Make sure it's actually going to hit with your audience and does what you want it to do, because it could totally fall flat. And you have to do that validation to make sure that what you're projecting is actually a good fit for the market, a good fit for your buyers, and something that's going to do what you want it to do.
Awesome. Look at that. 1, 2, 3, ready to go. Yeah, that's really great. And I would just add, Revive has done a lot of work in this space, trying to understand various decision makers that are at health systems, at health plans, on the clinician side, because we work with a wide variety of organizations that sell into those folks. And so just a little plug here, if there's any, you know, kind of audience information that would be useful, we have sort of a starter guide. We'd be happy to send it to any of our listeners. It's a series of personas and audience profiles that is just a starting place. And then we would recommend doing research on top of that and really understanding, okay, if you're selling into a health system CFO, let's just say, for example, who are they? What do they need? When do they make emotional decisions? When do they make rational decisions? What are their core challenges? What are their motivations? What channels are they living on? Who do they trust? That's kind of a sense of what's inside a typical profile, but then that gives you the ability to answer some of those questions that Brendan set up, which is, who do we want to be? How do we want to talk to our audiences? And where do we meet them? So we'd be happy to kind of give that get started guide if anybody's interested. But maybe we wrap there. Thank you, Brennan. And thank you, Chris, for sharing all your incredible experience and giving this great get started guide for folks. So thank you all for listening and thanks for joining in. If there's something you want us to cover, shoot us an email at nonormal@reviveagency.com. And as always, make sure you share the show with friends and colleagues. Give us a review and rating on iTunes. We always appreciate that. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal, even in a B2B world. Push that no normal. So we will talk to you all soon. Thank you so much. 3.